The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Good morning and welcome to the Hard Luck Show. You know what it is. Big Lux right here in the house with the Indian.
Chumahan!
And old Blue Eyes.
That's right.
You know what we got in the house today? You know what we got in here? Fucking get your seatbelts on. Because ain't no fucking cops, ain't no prosecutors, ain't no DAs kicking no doors in around here. Because you know what we got in here today? Attorney Rosenberg in the house! Woo! Yes!
What's
up?
Your get out of jail free card in the flesh right here.
Nicholas Rosenberg.
All right, guys. Thanks for having me. The energy in the room is great. My distinguished colleague in the braids, he's fucking shit up. He's kicking ass. Big Lux.
Yeah.
You know, we met at a listening party for The Reset with Cornejo, right? Yeah, Dave Ayers was there.
Yes, sir. That's right.
So I remember I was like checking out your gear. I was like, all right.
Yeah, all right. we were over at that house over there. And they were in the garage area, and it was the first night I was listening to some of his album.
Mm-hmm. And yep. Rick was there.
Yep.
The producer.
Rick was there. Yep.
Yeah, he's a hella cool cat.
Yeah, man, good guys. Good group of guys
for
over
sure.
there. For sure. And Ayers is another good dude. You
know? Yeah.
Absolutely.
You know, he's on his music. He knows the editing.
Absolutely. Let me ask you, because, yeah, I met you through Cornejo. Now, listen, you guys, if you're listening to this show, You know, I do this show with Sean, who is, I think, the best engineer, sound engineer in the world. He really handles this shit. And my co-host primarily is Chumahan, which I respect and love this dude, man. And he is practices law, man. And he just is so knowledgeable. And I have, like, I don't know. I really have, I just enjoy so much about what he does in the community and how he helps people. And as I started to kind of meet Mr. Rosenberg and pay attention and heard what Cornejo had said about you and then started following you and then started seeing the work you're doing, like I have a spot in my heart, like, you know, the work that you guys do, because you guys could be off doing some other bullshit, just making money.
Big law.
Big law. Where there's a lot of people that do that. And then there's guys like me and a lot of other people, man, that, you know, don't always have the representation, can't afford, or just, you know, and get asked out all the time. And I see you helping out the way I see Chumahan helping out people that normally wouldn't have that type of help. And you give your life to it, man. And there isn't always a huge paycheck attached to it, man. And that's something that's like me. How many times have we sat here and interviewed guys that had attorneys given to them or their families spent tens of thousands of dollars to help these guys, and attorneys didn't do shit but get them a life sentence.
Happens all the time.
And Chumahan's like, fuck, man. Like, it's incredible. And the fact that you are out there, I have so much respect for it. I really wanted to have you on the show, man. And I just respect the work that you do and the people you help in the community, man. It means the world to me because these are some of the big issues on this show. It's part of what I started this show so that people could share stuff like that. And that my partner being an attorney, we could really pick into these different situations. Yeah. It's a big part of our show, man. What you do and where you sit is a big dynamic of this show.
Right on.
Yeah, man. Did I say that kind of right, Chumahan?
I mean, you didn't say it kind of right. You said it fucking right.
Yeah.
And Rosenberg, you know, he's not stingy with his knowledge. I mean, He, so listen, if you're on Instagram or you're whatever, every once in a while you see Rosenberg come out of a courthouse, right?
Yeah,
he's
yeah.
He's got those fucking sunglasses on. He's got that hair. And yeah. He's got smiling client right next to him. Mm-hmm. That client has no handcuffs. That client's right. He's very excited.
Got his wife and maybe a baby in their hand.
Right. And Rosenberg comes out and he's got the, you know, he tells you like, it went in there.
Yep.
It was a murder decree one. Mm-hmm. They thought they had him. They found guns and blah, blah, blah. Walked out of court. And I'll tell you something. And then he goes on and he talks a lot about certain things. So what I want to do, I think, would be to get like maybe some of the quick stuff out of the way that people maybe who aren't initiated, haven't listened or whatever. And I've gone through a lot of your various interviews and saw some of the things you talked about. So one of the first things, right? Let's just get down to it.
Yeah, come on. Get it.
One of the first things that people ask you or they want to know from you is, if I get pulled over by a cop or if I'm somehow given a card from a detective that I might be a part of an investigation, how and what should these people tell the cops investigating them?
Sure. I'll take the second part first.
Yes.
Because it's a very vivid experience that people have, which is, where's your son? I need to talk to him. Where's your son? Well, he's not here right now. Here, take this card. It's important that he contacts me. And so what happens is people call me all the time and they're like, hey, Rosenberg, you know, what do I say? What do I do? The cops are looking for me. So we call that pre-arrest investigation phase of a case. And at that point, what I do is people hire me. I write a letter to the police and I basically break it down, right? Just like the shirt. I have no statement. I want my lawyer. So what that does is they know that they have a lawyer and they know my client's not going to make a statement and don't try to go behind my back. And I've shut down major, major charges with that. All right, so let's flip back to when you're in your car. Oh,
before you go to that, right? So why is it important at that stage of a pre-investigation, right? Why is it important that the cops know that an outside attorney or the attorney is telling them they want their attorney, they've got no statement to make? Why is it important to assert that then and there?
Well, there's many situations where somebody, oh, here's a situation. I think I'm innocent, right?
Right.
I got nothing to hide. I want to tell the cop. Well, my woman called the cops. She just wanted me out of the house, not realizing that out of the house is inside the jailhouse.
Right.
Right. So that I leave when the cops come, and then they want me to put myself at the crime scene. So as soon as I say, yeah, we were there, she grabbed me first, so I pushed her off of me. Right there, they may have probable cause to arrest you. So that's what we're doing. I can't control what the cops do, what they're investigating. They're not going to call me on the phone and say, hey, Rosenberg, we're looking for your boy, right?
Right.
The only thing we can control in criminal justice is our mouth. Mm-hmm. So again, I have no statement. I want my lawyer. What that does is, and I've done this on murder cases, attempt murder cases, kidnapping, all kinds of crazy stuff. In my experience, it works.
Right. And let me ask you this. Is there a difference? Do people get Mirandized? Do you have to be told your rights before you've been arrested, if you're not arrested? And when you talk and they haven't given you your Miranda rights and you haven't been arrested yet and you're just saying stuff, can that be thrown out of court or is that kept into court? How? What's the difference?
Right. I have a post on this very issue, just to let you know. It's done at my Valley office, and I talk about Miranda and Perkins. So I'm going to get to Perkins.
Yeah.
But what is Miranda? Miranda is actually kind of a judicial accident. The current court is not a pro-Miranda court, and I expect to see some erosions on that. But while we still have it, knock on wood, what Miranda says is that for a custodial interrogation, in order to prevent false confessions, coerced confessions, which they used to literally use rubber hoses. The case is Brown versus Mississippi, and they would beat it out of you. So if you're in a custodial interrogation, they have to read you your rights because the situation is such that the power of the state can overcome your will, and then you talk.
So let me put that in layman's terms real quick. So what the court said is you have to have the authorities that are holding you remind you that you don't have to talk, because when you're sitting there surrounded by all these cops and they're kicking your ass, you might feel like you don't have a choice. The situation alone makes you feel like you don't have a choice.
Right.
Okay, go ahead.
No, and I agree with that. So when you're in your car or when you're just in your cuffs, you're not necessarily in custody.
Right.
So there's a lot of case law on this, but basically, when you're at the station and you do your live scan and they take your booking photo, you're booked. That's usually the precedent to the Miranda warning. So people say to me all the time, hey, Rosenberg, they never read me my rights, bro. Can we get it thrown out? And so the question is, what are you getting thrown out?
Right.
If you don't make an incriminating statement, then Miranda doesn't matter because they're not going to use your denial against you.
Right.
Okay? So it's the right combination. That's what Miranda is. But let's talk about a hypothetical where I get arrested, the cop books me on attempt murder with firearm. Right?
Yeah.
And they pull me out of the tank and they say, okay, Rosenberg, you're in the interview room. You have these rights. And I say, I want my lawyer. I want Rosenberg, right? Okay. But then they put you back in the tank. And let's say it's a cold case murder that happened 2 years ago, right? And your little Sally is not who you think. Mm-hmm. He might be an undercover detective. He might be a jailhouse informant.
Right.
And they're recording. And they do that in cases, especially cold case murders and where somebody asserted their Fifth Amendment right to not incriminate themselves. So then you're talking to the homies,
right,
and then you're saying all kinds of crazy stuff, and they don't have to give you a Miranda warning. Why? Because you don't believe you're talking to the police.
Right.
So the Perkins is the next phase of I have no statement, I want my lawyer. It's no offense, bro, but Rosenberg told me I can't talk in the tank. Now, if you get to that level, then you've controlled how your mouth can incriminate you.
And I mean, how likely is it that, how often do you see or read these police reports or read whatever it is that someone's mouth got them in trouble?
All the time. And that's what I say. In criminal justice, we can't control everything. The only thing, one thing you can control in God's wide world is your mouth.
And sometimes when I'm watching like the first 48 or some shit like that, right? Mm-hmm. The cops always are like, look, man, just level with me and I'll work with you. Does that ever actually work out for anybody?
I would say unlikely. So what you're talking about is, so when it comes to interrogations, requests for admissions, etc., there's this thing called the Reed method of interrogation that goes back to post-World War. Looks like you guys are familiar with it. Mm-hmm. So what that is rapport building.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So you're saying, hey, man, I can tell the judge, I can tell the DA, this is your chance to tell your side of the story.
They bring you a Coke.
We want to be fair.
Right.
And the Coke, you know, hey, I just, the case I just settled, they offered my guy a Coke.
Right.
So I almost said some Coke. I think I need to hit a Red Bull. So, yeah, that's one thing that we can control in this world. And then how likely are they to use a Perkins agent, which is the name of that undercover on my murders? I see it all the time.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, all the
time.
You
see fucking guys planted.
All the time.
All
bro.
The time.
Think about that, you guys listening. Think about that. I got two attorneys saying they see it all the time. Think about that, you guys.
When you go to law school, they put you through constitutional law one and constitutional law two. And part of it is the search and seizure and the interrogation and your basic rights, right? And what is, you know, proper for the state to do and what isn't. And in those cases, there's so much bullshit that the cops have a lot of power. They have a lot of fucking power. And the reason why we're supposed to be protected against the state is because the founding fathers came over from King George, who was torturing motherfuckers in the Star Chamber and making them say shit and all this stuff.
Right.
They're tired of it. So they came over here and they go, And we've been in, I think, maybe in the last 50 years, maybe 40 years, a closing down of those rights, a cinching down, partly from technology and partly from court decisions. Mm. So that you get weird little fact patterns where it's like, okay, so if I'm in my house and I'm smoking meth and the cop is on a public street and he's looking through the window and I've got the blinds down, so it's clear I don't want anybody invading my privacy, but there's a tear in the blinds. And through that tear, the cop can see me smoking the meth. And does that give him probable cause to come in and fucking arrest me and search the fucking house? Or do you have a right to privacy in a public restroom if you've locked the door, but there's that crack and the cop can look through that crack? Do in like in some things you would say common sense is yeah, but then the law would say no, sorry, you don't. You know the crack's there. Right. You know people can look through it, blah, 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 blah. So now I want to turn to something I've seen you talk about I thought was fascinating, because mm-hmm. people don't know this. Rosenberg does a lot of work in forensics, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like he studies, he goes to fucking colleges and like these weird crazy seminars and fucking the Eagle's Nest up in these cliffs and studies forensic, what they can do.
Wow.
So
you got to be up on that shit so you know how to use it, right?
So mm-hmm. talk a little bit about how the state and the Fed even mm-hmm. can invade or look at or track your cell phones sure. and what's being said on the cell phones, and whether or not, because you see it on like The Wire, mm-hmm. right? Like whether or not this burner phones actually do anything, or what the state's mandated reset or report is, how many days do they have to do the report? Can you walk us through a little bit of what the case law is and what the rules are related to cell phones?
Sure. The first thing I'll say is, what does the word forensic mean?
Yes.
Because we hear it all the time.
Yeah.
And what it means to me is someone who's not a percipient witness is analyzing evidence and rendering an opinion.
Right.
So you can have a forensic psychologist. You yep. can have a forensic expert.
Accountant.
Did not do the DNA testing themselves, but they're going to review that.
Right.
So when it comes to cell phones, oh, my cell phone's here. I can't hold it up.
Yeah.
So the first thing is that there used to be a doctrine called the third-party disclosure doctrine. And what that meant is whatever you tell your power company, this is for all the growers in the house.
Yeah.
What you tell your power company, you've disclosed it to a third party, so you have no privacy interest, right?
Right.
And that's how they used to treat the phone bills, caller lists, call history. That was all third-party information that you have waived your privacy right to.
So
right?
that would mean that the cops wouldn't have to get a warrant to go grab your fucking information that you gave to the phone company, right?
Right.
Right.
So we had actually a good case that came out, I want to say 6 years ago, Carpenter. And what that case said is, look, the reality of modern life is that everything is on our phone. So we're going to recognize a right to privacy in this third party disclosure device.
Right.
And we're going to say that you need to get a warrant in order to do a cell phone search, which could be a cell phone extraction. And by extraction, I mean there's a machine, we call it the Cellebrite machine, that's a company in Israel. They basically hook it up and they make a carbon copy of everything that's on that phone.
But what if you've deleted something? I mean, I imagine right. people think they've deleted shit off their phone so that if they do this carbon copy, they're mm-hmm. not going to see anything. Can they find stuff?
They can. This is an interesting point. And in my cases, I work with forensic cell phone tower experts when we talk about GPS positioning. I work with experts. I've done defense phone extractions. So real quick, there's two types of extractions. There's one called a logical extraction. Think of that as like software mode. And then there's one called a physical extraction. And for a physical extraction, they actually destroy the memory banks of the phone in order to get stuff. And they can recover deleted files. So the world that I try to live in, I think everyone should be in this world mm-hmm. to the extent possible, is everything I say, every email, every text, imagine one day a judge will be reading it. That's the world that I live in.
Right.
And if they get my phone, you know what I mean? So it's difficult to live at that level.
Right.
So People talk to me about, well, I erased my iPhone, right? I locked my iPhone, I erased my iPhone. People talk about stuff like this on the jail phone, and it doesn't always work out for them. So that's a little bit about cell phones.
Right.
The guys used to use WhatsApp, and I'll imitate my friend. He's like, WhatsApp, WhatsApp. So, and that's Prime Suspects, if you know Prime. So encryption, let's talk about encryption.
Yeah.
So when you make certain types of calls, like a FaceTime call, technically that is end-to-end encrypted, right?
Yeah.
So if the government has a wiretap, they're not supposed to be able to get into that.
Right.
Let's talk a little bit about wiretaps, because the word wiretap with the old phones, the landlines, they literally had to tap in to the wire in order to hear it. And I have one of my firearm experts told me that if you have a landline, you can measure the current flow and you can tell that they're tapping because they're diverting.
Wow.
So that's a little Easter egg.
A little tip.
On the landline.
There you go.
So for a wiretap, there's some interesting rules. One thing is it's supposed to be 3 pounds of dope. And there's, you know, murder. They can get a wiretap on a murder. That sounds fairly self-evident. But there's a thing in California in the statute, which is Penal Code 629.5. We say et sec, meaning keep turning pages
right
after that. That any felony with a gang enhancement on it can be a subject of a wiretap.
So there are some crimes, though, that can't be subject.
Correct.
Like, what kind of crimes would those be?
You don't get a wire for a simple battery.
Right.
Right?
Right.
Now, you do get wires for conspiracy to commit a murder.
Right.
Because the wire is well suited for that. But what I wanted to bring up a little case history, because I think it's interesting. A lot of people know the case I did in Ventura for Daniel Pena, who was alleged to be high-ranking prison gang leader, mm-hmm. was on a prison cell phone. They had a wiretap. They were listening. And it was actually in his case, I ended up getting his wiretap thrown out, but he had another jail phone case, and there were wires on that. So I challenged the California statute that says any felony with a gang enhancement on top of it, you can go ahead and pursue a wire. Because the federal law is more protective than the California law on that. Basically, I think that whole thing is bullshit.
Right.
If you take perjury and then you try to add for the benefit of, in association with, or at the direction of a criminal street gang,
yeah,
then that is not a felony that's inherently dangerous to life, limb, or property. So anyways, what I'm trying to tell you is that for wires, typically, they have to do 10-day reports.
Yeah.
So they have to kind of update it and see, are they getting pertinent calls? If they're listening to nothing, the judge can shut it down.
Is it the judge who reviews the 10-day report to say, yes, mm-hmm. there's actual activity here, or no, this is bullshit, let it go?
Yeah. So the term of art, if you will, is called pertinent call. Mm-hmm. So the problem with the homies on the phone is that they speak in ways that the experts can say, well, they're using code.
Right.
Right. So in one of my cases, I can't disclose which, but somebody says, hey, black girl. And black girl is supposed to be black tar heroin, right?
Right.
Somebody says white girl, and you can imagine what it is.
Right.
So the problem when you're speaking to your buddies is that they can have their gang expert say they're speaking in code. And when we read the federal reports, they always say, you know, UI1, unindicted co-conspirator 1, speaking in code, relayed the following.
So that's fucked up. So that in actual words, if you were just to look at the words on the page, it would seem not pertinent. But then they can bring in some guy to say, well, what that actually means is heroin.
Correct.
And now it's a pertinent call.
Right.
Fuck.
So the thing with pertinent calls is that there's no point for the wire if they're not getting anything, right?
Right.
So I think you're bringing up the point, and I'm trying to strengthen that point, when it comes to codes, you know? So I have clients on the phone, hey, where's the baby? Where's the candle? make sure to tell old boy about the baby.
Right.
And what they're going to say is, oh, that's gang member one instructing gang member two to go hide the firearm.
Right. Colonel Mustard with the candlestick in the billiard room.
There you go.
Right. That's, you got to invent new codes.
Clue reference for those people that you talked about
right.
earlier who
right.
were on heart
adult
medication.
Contemporary. Right. Lipitor. Lipitor. The Lipitor.
I had heard that it was MySpace. No, not MySpace, but Facebook owns WhatsApp.
Yeah, I think that's correct.
And that guy's in bed with the government and everybody else.
I think all those guys, and maybe Rosenberg can talk about this. So,
but WhatsApp, but like, there's been people I've heard say, oh, WhatsApp is encrypted and WhatsApp is, mm-hmm. and I feel like there's absolutely no way that anything is encrypted. Like, they're mm-hmm. listening to everything.
Right. So, let's talk about WhatsApp, because it is end-to-end encrypted, but that doesn't matter if they get your phone before you delete, right? So in my cases, I see plenty of WhatsApp chats.
Mm-hmm.
Could be with someone who's in prison. It could be two people who are out of custody. So in other words, relying on this idea of end-to-end encryption, it doesn't always work because they can get your chats directly from your device.
But Big Lux brings up a really good mm-hmm. point, which is, you know, a lot of this tech is, you know, military originated. And then you have essentially private companies that aren't public actors, so they're not necessarily controlled by the Constitution, right? And then, you know, at some level, their ability to do business is licensed by the government. And so one wonders, is anything really not traceable? Is blockchain really not traceable? Is the dark web really the dark web, or is that just a monitoring device for the government to just keep an eye on and track the really dangerous guys? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I had a guy come see me, and when he saw me, he was doing little speed transactions, maybe 5 grams, 6 grams, 7 grams, and he was mailing it out. He and his crew, I should say, allegedly,
right,
were mailing out substances to, like, out of state, Mississippi, Oklahoma. And you say to yourself, why is this guy in federal court? Well, he's in federal court because he was doing all this on the dark web.
Right.
And they are surfing that dark web, and they found him on his surfboard.
Right.
And for relatively small activity, he was in the feds looking at a 10-year mandatory minimum.
Wow.
So myself, I would stay off, what's it called, Silk Road?
Yes.
Dark web.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I mean, everyone reads the paper, right?
They right.
say conspiracy to commit murder of so-and-so. The guys wanted to buy some weapons from the FBI. So the state is creating some of these crimes by having undercovers, you know, set people up. So
now, I had a question for you because... Mm-hmm. In reading and learning a little bit about what you do and where you came from, you started out sort of as a community organizer in the Tenderloin in Northern California. Is that where you're originally from?
No, I'm an LA native, Fairfax High, for those
yeah.
of you who know the facts. And then I went off to Berkeley and started about a 10-year decade in the Bay Area. So from there, after college, I went to film school.
Yeah.
And then my hair was about your length.
Yes, sir.
But I never braided it. And then I ended up getting discovered by the community in the Tenderloin.
Uh-huh.
And I became a public safety organizer, basically shutting down crack houses,
mm-hmm.
not criminalizing it, but pushing property owners to clean up their properties through nuisance.
Right.
So through that, I got very involved in local politics in San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
So that, I'll say this, the skills that I learned as a community organizer are the skills that help me run my business, right?
Our bodies come in different shapes and sizes, so doesn't it make sense that our weight loss plans should too? That's the beauty of Noom. They build a personal plan that factors in dietary restrictions, medical issues, and other personal needs so your plan works for you. Noom doesn't restrict or shame when you want to treat yourself. Their flexible program focuses on progress instead of perfection. You don't have to give up carbs or anything. And with their daily lessons, you can learn something new about your food choices every day. After just a few days of using the app, I learned how to recognize cues for overeating and how to choose the right foods to feel full. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Sure, but then where was the turn to the law? What happened there? Mm-hmm. You were like, look, I gotta make some shekels. I gotta put some food on the table, so I gotta at least go to the law. I mean, that's kind of how it happened for me. I went to film school too. Okay. I went to UCLA MFA screenwriting.
Awesome.
Right. Where did you go to film school at?
I was at City College of San Francisco.
Beautiful.
And we had access to 16mm equipment after one semester.
Right.
So the people at SF State, who thought they were better than us, they used to come over and use our equipment.
Right.
So anyways, how I got into the law, I was with my significant other. She was in law school.
Right.
I was in film school, and I was a philosophy major.
Right on.
So I did a documentary about her moot court class.
Okay.
And that's how I kind of enmeshed with the curriculum, and I said, hey, man, I can do this.
Right. And then you went into the law, and then so when you went into law, what was your like real law job coming out of law school?
Right. So in law school, I worked for the San Francisco Sheriffs.
Okay.
And it was called Prisoner Legal Services, and we had the power to actually sue the city and county. So
wow.
We went all throughout the jail. Oh, sorry. We went all throughout the jail, even where the SVPs are, way past the attorney interview room. And I also was an extern at the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeal. So then she became my wife, was in civil, so they put me in criminal. So I used to do, we present cases to the Ninth Circuit judges, three judge panels.
Right.
So I did that. And when I got out of law school, the first job was as a public defender in Tulare County.
Where's Tulare County?
So that's a good question. Somewhere between Bakersfield and Fresno is the city called Visalia. So that's where I started out.
I know all those little towns.
I feel like that's a lot of meth up there.
I lived up in all those places. It's a lot of death.
Death penalty.
Really?
Yeah, those are all part of the areas... Kings County and all these different little counties that all the prisons are located in. All this stuff. Central, it's all Central Coast shit.
Right.
For sure. No, you're absolutely right. In fact, when I was a young baby public defender picking juries, we would have people say, well, you know, my husband's a correctional officer.
Oh, right.
My dad works at the prison. My uncle, he's a sergeant with this agency. So these are people that I obviously don't want on my jury.
Right.
But
right.
You hit it on the head. It's the cheap rural off the 99.
Yep.
You got that one.
Yeah, you got that one, Big Lux.
I'm saying you know something about that.
No, he hit that one. That was...
No.
Because every time you get in trouble in prison...
Right.
And they want to try and bound it over and prosecute you in the county. These counties would either pick the case up or they wouldn't pick it up. You know what I'm saying?
It gets
dropped by it. So I heard many a times, you know, these different names of these different counties. You know, Kings County was I think Kings County was like Corcoran somewhere.
Yeah.
Sat in Kings County.
Yes.
Like, what do you do?
I was waiting
there
for them to pick up a fucking case on me, and they didn't.
What do you do for fun out there, Rosenberg? Like, how long were you out there? Like, what do? You go get a steak dinner? I mean, what the fuck do you do out there?
Well, there's not a lot to do. but, you know, it was, for me, it was kind of like boot camp training, right? I'm in the second poorest county in California, the highest per capita welfare recipient, population banks, agricultural, more right. churches than liquor stores.
Right.
And so I started out with the Cowboys.
Right.
So now, you know, where I'm at, it's a whole different thing. But, I mean, we got treated like such absolute crap. It was amazing. So,
like what? Give us an example.
I mean, we had DAs looking through our binders, looking through our notebook. I had a DA, baby DA, actually say in closing argument, well, what the officer would have said was, hey, wait a minute, objection, mistrial.
That's not in evidence. Right.
No, no, he didn't call the officer, but he wants to inform the jury
what he would have said.
Craziness.
So, you know, that doesn't happen out here.
Right.
So let me ask you something else. Let's talk about your events company. What you're doing with the events, and let's talk about that a little bit, man. Because we were involved in a concert mm-hmm. that you and your guys and we cross promoted. Can you tell us a little bit about that and talk about how that got started and what you have coming up? Tell us
for
about
sure.
your events company.
Right. Well, I do what I do through my law corporation. So I've been fortunate to be a sponsor of some concerts. And I do that mostly it's with the Chicano rap genre.
Sure.
That's kind of, and the way I see it is, you know, the community show me love. So I'm trying to put something back in, helps the artists out. People can get out there, they can perform. So I like the idea, you know, Rosenberg, I put my money into the community that's been supporting me. So, but I got offered an opportunity to become an investor. Mm-hmm. And so that's when I started teaming up with Nationwide Presents.
Nationwide wow. Presents. And, we did Summer Nights.
Yeah, exactly.
We did
okay,
Summer
Micheladas.
Nights.
Mm-hmm. So the next event that's coming up is going to be the Latin American Motion Picture Awards. We
yes.
call that LAMPA. That's going to be December
nice.
3rd. I believe they have the venue is going to be a golf course. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the first one, they had a lot of big stars. Danny Trejo, et cetera, was there. But the purpose of the LAMPA, and that's producer Andy Rodriguez. So I'll give Nationwide N-Dub and Andy Rodriguez their shout outs. Those are folks that I've been working with. But what the goal of LAMPA is to recognize the unsung heroes who aren't, you know, like the big Hollywood celebrities.
Right.
Which not knocking them. It's just the people that are operating in the dark that nobody knows about.
Right.
So part of the purpose of LAMPA is to amplify and elevate those folks.
Absolutely.
That's awesome. And I think it's Latin Heritage Month this month right now, right?
Yes.
Which is why DeSantis did all that bullshit by busing immigrants up to fucking Martha's Vineyard and all that crap, if you've been following that.
Yeah.
Now, I'm going to ask, I didn't tell anybody I was going to ask this.
Mm-hmm.
You are a dyed-in-the-wool, true and true defense attorney, meaning, you don't judge, you're not here to fucking say whatever. You know that your job is to defend this person. Right, to the maximum that the law allows, and it's the only way that you're going to hold this government accountable and fair, right?
Mm-hmm.
Do I have that right?
I do, yeah, you got it.
Okay, so would you defend Donald Trump?
So that's an interesting question. In theory, it's possible.
Right.
In theory, it's possible.
Sure.
But when you're in private practice, you do get to choose your own clients.
Right.
So, and, you know, this kind of just a brief segue. People always ask me, Rosenberg, what's up with the bandera, right? So what I say about that is, you know, the country belongs to everyone.
And that's
don't,
right.
Don't let the fascistas
yes.
commandeer the flag. So.
So
going back to
yeah.
that. Yeah. It's possible to defend anybody, and we have a Sixth Amendment right to counsel that doesn't say everybody except prison gang leader
right.
XYZ, okay? But as far as working with a client, I think I would probably respectfully decline.
Okay, so now we know if it was your choice, right, mm-hmm. you would say maybe you would be better with another attorney, not mm-hmm. the great Rosenberg. Okay, we understand that. But guess what, people? Mm-hmm. And this happened, I want to say this happened in the, who's that fucking guy that thinks frogs are gay and he's telling everybody that was a hoax in Sandy Hook? Don't what? Give me that. You know who I'm talking about, Loudmouth.
Alex Jones.
Okay.
Alex Jones, right. InfoWars.
InfoWars, right. He's against information. So, okay, Alex Jones, right? He has, I think he's on his 11th attorney. Mm-hmm. Okay, and it's probably because partially to delay, because of new attorney, but also partially maybe he's not listening to his attorneys. Okay. But then there comes a point in time where, because we have the Sixth Amendment, somebody does have a right. Even the most vile person you could think of in your mind right now has a right to have counsel. And at some point, the judge says, sorry, you're stuck. Nobody wants to help him. Now you're going to help him. Mm. So, and so this is beyond your choice. But mm-hmm. I am curious, because this man knows a lot. This man is Rosenberg. I don't think we fully appreciate the intelligence and wisdom and sagacity that we have here. So the judge says to you, Rosenberg, I know that because you love America, probably Trump would be better off with some other attorney, Giuliani, whatever. But you're stuck by virtue of the law. You believe in America so much, Rosenberg, that you're stuck now. What would be your strategy given the search warrant that was just executed and what they found? Do you have any thoughts on where this guy's going to go from here?
So the first thing is, let's say I'm a public defender.
Right.
And they slam, I'll just use this, maybe you can see it on camera. They slam the file and it turns out it says Donald J. Trump.
Right.
So what am I going to do? Right. I can't get off the case.
You can't.
So the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to look at the charges. I'm going to pull up the jury instruction, and I'm going to see what exactly this person is accused of violating.
Right.
Because the jury instruction tells me where the end point is, where I'm headed. Have I had clients that are very extremely difficult to deal with? Of course. Have I had clients who lie to me? Of course. Have I had clients that I wouldn't share a glass of red wine with? Mm-hmm. Of course. But if you're saying Rosenberg, put up or shut up,
yep.
Are you a real Sixth Amendment lawyer? I'm going to say, yes, I am. Mm. And I'm going to say the government's overreaching, it's bullshit, it's speculation, mm-hmm. etc. Now, at the same time, I can play prosecutor.
Right.
To be a defense lawyer, you actually have to play prosecutor sometimes better than the prosecutor.
Right.
So playing prosecutor, I mean, you know, what I really wonder about is this thing that's happened. This is getting a little political, so if you're not.
Please get in there.
If you're not into Team Red.
We have real conversations here.
Yeah. No, I'm talking about, you know, the folks out there.
Yeah.
Okay. So the idea that Trump is saying things like, if I'm indicted, you're going to see something that you've never seen before. I mean, that is, you know, that's so beyond Orwellian.
Right.
And, you know, I think I have a tendency in Los Angeles to feel like I don't have to worry about all that, right? I'm in my la-la bubble.
Right.
I have things I'm worried about. But really, you know, this is major stuff. Again, Sixth Amendment, First Amendment.
Right.
That's why we set up this country. And, you know, I took an oath to defend the Constitution, and I'm an officer of the court, so I take it very seriously.
Right. Man, what do you think of that, Big Lex? That was an amazing answer. What do you take from that?
I just like how deep you guys go on this law shit, you know? I think it's fascinating. I like what you said, man. I mean, you don't have to hold any punches here. I mean, this guy's tore into, like, this whole Donald Trump thing.
Right.
And he's gone as far as to say, you know, when you talked about the fucking prosecutor or whoever it was, the federal guy running the things, like, when Trump was like, They might have planted evidence, so he fucking go ahead and open up and made the warrant public.
Right.
Right?
Right.
Like, you don't do that. You were like, you don't do that unless there's something really going on.
Right. Because the political stakes are so high, right, that that the Attorney General of the United States, Merrick Garland, right, those guys have been gaming this shit out for a while, thinking about, okay, so we're going to do this. What's Trump likely to do? If he does X, what can we do? And they would have had to vet that search warrant, and only the AG could sign that and say, yes, we're going forward with it. They would only do that if they were certain that they were going to find something at that level. Because if they had nothing but a fart in a bucket, then it would be game over for, quote unquote, the federal government, who is the target of Trump and MAGA. This is me. My personal feeling is the whole thing with Bannon, the whole thing with Trump, the reason why MAGA people don't get upset that they've been ripped off, right? Stolen from, scammed, is because I think everybody knows that all of this money is being funneled into white power militias. They don't expect there to be a wall built. They really didn't. No, they're not. They're idiots for what they believe in, but no, they don't. They're not being fooled by Trump. There's this surge, and this is what Trump is saying, and this is what Lindsey Graham said, right? If he gets indicted, there's going to be riots. And then so everyone goes, whoa, that's a low-key threat. What are you saying? I mean, that's almost Al-Qaeda-level bullshit you're just saying right there. And they go, oh, no, I'm just talking fast. I'm just spitballing. I don't know what I'm saying. Maybe I'm out of my mind. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I'd be careful if it was me. I don't know.
Yeah.
Anyway.
My reaction, I'm a state court defense lawyer. I've done some federal cases. But I don't hold myself out as an expert on the Department of Justice and the internal, machinations and politics. But we're in unprecedented times. And, some students of history have said, hey, man, it's going to be.
Well, all right, check this out. I'll tell you this. I'm reading a book, I highly recommend it, called Rescuing Freud. And it's all about Freud stayed in Vienna, Nazi Vienna, even though he was one of the most highly visible Jewish prominent guys in the world, right? He stays in Vienna because he loves the city, his family's there. And also Freud, to a certain extent, might have been in a little bit of denial, but also was very proud of Vienna. And he was proud of who he was, and he was kind of a guy that didn't back down from this kind of bullshit. Maybe a little bit of a megalomaniac, maybe thought he was above other shit too. So the other folks, though, the other people in the Jewish community were like, this guy is a world treasure. He belongs to the world, and we've got to get him out of Vienna. So it takes a long time, and he's there. But as I'm reading this book, right, this author is laying out, like, how does Freud become Freud in the first place, right? And not only that, but maybe 10 years behind Freud is Hitler coming from Linz or wherever the fuck he was from, as an art student coming to Vienna, the same town. And in fact, Hitler went to one of Freud's psychoanalytic discussion groups as a teen and said, oh, that's not for me. I don't like it. And there's a lot of talk about what would have happened had Hitler actually listened a little bit to the principles and started doing some of that inner work. Maybe history might be different. But what's fascinating is the steps and the things you see talked about in Vienna, because Vienna at that time was a cosmopolitan, very tolerant place for that time. And then you start seeing this sort of group of Germans or Austrians who start feeling that the Jewish people and communism is starting to somehow erode the national identity of Austrian Germany, and it needs protection. So what do? They build a little political group. They also align themselves with a certain type of Christianity to try to keep that pure. And before you know it, there's a mayor who is a pragmatist. The mayor of Vienna gets elected. In fact, Franz Joseph, the emperor, won't sign off on him for 4 years, but he keeps getting elected eventually. But he's a pragmatist, and everyone at the time, including Jewish leaders at the time, still weren't necessarily like, oh, something crazy's going on right now. They were just like, you know, he's playing to the rednecks of Austria, mm-hmm. basically, to get elected. But Hitler, after he didn't make it into art school, started listening to the pragmatic political guy that's just juicing these people, right, to get elected, but doesn't really believe it. But Hitler believes it. He doesn't have the sense to understand this guy's playing a political game. And he starts pushing into another direction. And that is what I think we are seeing here in this fucking country right now. And believe you me, the intelligentsia and the people who should have been on the watch and all the people that should have been skeptical in Vienna, they were a little asleep at the wheel. They didn't see the danger before it was too late. So I do think that we are in an unprecedented territory in this country right now. It's never been like this in the sense. And I do think that there are huge amounts of people who are playing. I think that's why the Republicans are stuck. You have these moderate Republicans that played to these rednecks. And now they want out, but it's too late. They have their party. And so now we, as a people, have to come together and do exactly what Rosenberg said. This is our country. Mm-hmm. We can proudly wait. An American Indian, a Jewish person, a Chicano, a 49ers fan, they should be able to say, I love this country. The flag belongs to me. It doesn't just belong to these folks.
Yeah.
Right?
Fuck yeah.
And yeah. It was almost good. We almost...
That was fucking great, man. and then it all started coming apart.
Did we tell you that he's a genius audio engineer?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. That's why I'm on the show.
Right, of course.
Yes.
Right. So, Rosenberg, where can people go to find out about
Rosenberg,
your services?
Dog,
yeah,
everything. Like,
how do people get in touch with your firm?
So the easiest way to get at your boy Rosenberg is going to be at Attorney Rosenberg on Instagram.
Yeah.
I answer all my DMs, and I spend a lot of time, you know, doing it because I want to be accessible.
Right.
Usually from the DMs, I go to my cell phone, and then we start finishing up the intake. But, you know, this is what I say. A lot of people who follow me, they're never going to need me. Right. They're interested in the law and hopefully I answer some questions. But it's really that person who knows somebody who knows somebody.
Right.
And that's the value of keeping, you know, current with an account like mine.
Yes.
So most of my referrals are word of mouth. And I take that very seriously.
Right.
Because that's the community basically judging you. Yeah. You know, that's
absolutely.
Beyond Yelp. It's beyond Yelp.
Yes. 100%.
Right. I mean, listen, word of mouth Rosenberg. And from what I've heard, even within the law circles, Rosenberg is the real deal. He's accessible. You'll get to talk to him and he'll fucking punch back. He's not like when you see. Have you ever seen those memes with the lawyers with like their no tailored pants? And it's like, right.
Yeah,
if that's your lawyer, you're going to lose.
Yeah.
Right.
If that's your lawyer, you're going to jail.
Right. If this is your
lawyer.
We've
talked about it 100 times.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you want your lawyer walking in like this guy, bro.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Dude, like Rosenberg looks so... He looks like a kind of guy who gets the arguments right and knows what the fucking evidence really is.
Yes.
Right?
Appreciate
well, he looks like
that.
Fucking...
Appreciate
I mean,
that.
From the neck down, he looked like he might... And the little American bin. Other than that, guy might be John Gotti.
Right.
Guy's in here wearing a Brioni suit with fucking cufflinks, bro. Guy's either ready to cut like $1 billion
right.
deal or...
Right.
Defend you in court.
Right.
Listen, fuck yeah.
Appreciate
listen.
That.
And this is... Listen, a big round of applause to Mrs. Rosenberg. She obviously won the husband lottery. Mm-hmm. Her, she needs to worry about nothing else. I also married an attorney.
Mm-hmm.
So we also have that in common. And I just got to say, I'm going to refer all crim cases that come to me. And I get a lot because people hit me up from the show all the time. Mm-hmm. I'll refer them on down to Rosenberg.
Appreciate that, man.
Absolutely.
I really do.
Yeah, brother. It's good stuff, man. Rosenberg, we need you. We need you to keep popping in.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We need you to come by. When you got events, when you want to shoot some stuff, when you got something big, when we want to do a show that's kind of aimed at some law things.
For sure.
We need you to come in, man. We don't have another guest like you. Yeah. I like hearing both of you guys kind of, you know, peel stuff back. So thank you. Thank you for coming in.
I got one quick shout out.
Please, as many as you want.
Let us get out of here.
Let it rip.
So, yes.
Not a lot of people know that I'm on the board of directors for the Always for the People Foundation. Yes. And if you know the Mr. Checkpoint account.
Yes. He was on our show.
Always film the
police. Love that.
Always film the police.
Okay, so he's our executive director, Senate Devermont.
Man, shout out to Senate, man. We love that dude, man.
We have launched an organization. It's a nonprofit. We've got several initiatives that we're pursuing, one of which is ending felony murder rule, another of which is making jury duty cool, making jury duty sexy. Another initiative is dealing with the veterans on the West Side who are unhoused, yet they've got 350 acres.
From Westwood to Brentwood. That's being misused.
And so the shout out is really to the foundation, the nonprofit. And
what's it called again?
Always for the People. AFTP, Always for the People Foundation.
I love it.
Follow Mr. Checkpoint. For the listeners, follow Checkpoint and get hooked up with us, because you're going to start seeing some amazing work from Always for the People Foundation. And shout out to Senate for being the founder.
Yeah. Absolutely.
A big shout out. And as a matter of fact, I think that we should, at the Hard Luck Show, start having Jesus hashtag Always for the People.
I'm with it.
On our hashtags from now on, with our publications that go out, dude.
Yeah,
we're gonna start hashtagging,
man.
We need to share that, man. That's
Instagram
a huge part
Jesus.
Of this.
Yeah.
Yeah. Instagram Jesus, take notes of that, bro. We're going to start including them in, because that's important stuff. And we're behind you guys 100%, man.
Yeah.
Appreciate it.
Where can people go to learn about Always for the People?
So go to the Checkpoint account at Mr. Checkpoint. I think it's Always for the People, one big word, but don't quote me. And I'm live right now, so I can't pull it up. You know, get at me. Just get at me. DM me.
Right on.
And when I have the resources,
you know what I'll do is I'll ask later and get the Instagram or the website, and we'll put it up on his post. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Attorney Rosenberg, for coming in today.
Yes.
Hey, appreciate it, guys. Yeah. You're doing great stuff, and I really enjoyed it. And this guy, this is my new buddy, man.
Yeah, man. Good shit.
Hell yeah. I'll comp him over at the casino, Indian casino. You're comp. Don't you even worry about it.
Yeah. Sean, what you got?
Sean at movemento.media for all your audio and podcasting needs.
Yeah.
Listen to me.
Yes.
You ain't been over to hardluckshow.com. Go over today, right now. And I have an idea for you. Check this out. There's podcasts out there. They do, you know, when UFC comes on, they do Fight Companion. What I'm thinking is, if there's ever like a big court case, you should come in and we could watch it live, and you guys can kind of walk us through what's going on, the play-by-play. Mm-hmm. What do you think about that?
I love that idea.
Yeah.
Ringside in the court. And, dude, how great would it have been to have Rosenberg to talk about the jinx and like all that shit that went? What was the name of that guy?
Yeah.
Right, that fucking fought his murder case.
He chopped, HBO shit.
Chopped somebody up in Texas and still got off.
Right. And then he went over to L.A. and like killed his best friend.
I would have loved to have Rosenberg talk through all that
and
shit.
And he dressed as a girl.
Right. That part was phenomenal.
Yeah, I forget his name, but we all know who you're referring to.
Yeah.
One quick thing I'll say, and everyone watched the Amber Heard, Johnny Depp.
Oh, yes. I did.
So, yeah. And my takeaway from that is, it's really the legal team that you pick reflects on you yourself.
Right.
So I believe that Johnny Depp did a much better job of finding the right legal team. Because there's a difference between legal team on paper and in court ready to rock and roll.
Right.
And the reason I bring that up is, I think after seeing Camille Vasquez, you're going to see applications from women to law school go up.
Right.
And it's interesting. So I would love to be in a scenario where we can comment on what we see.
My takeaway from the Johnny Depp is I agree with what you said. It's also cross-examination. Less is more.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Hit Amber Heard's attorney gave Johnny Depp so many openings to basically walk their case through the fucking mud and make fun of them in front of the jury. And that's an excellent, excellent, excellent example of ask you a couple of questions you think matter and then get the fuck on out, especially if you're dealing with a likable star.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. We say that all the time. Get in, get what you need, and get out.
Go ahead. What you got?
That was it.
Okay.
I'm not even going to put my firm on. Rosenberg. I'm going to tell everybody, go fucking see Rosenberg. And go to Always For The People. Donate. Show up. Support. Whatever you can do. Make the world a better place.
Listen, I want to thank Attorney Rosenberg. At Attorney Rosenberg. Go check him out. I want to give a shout out to Estevan Oreo and the whole Soul Assassin team. Big shout out to Burner, the Cookies crew, and Vibes Rolling Papers. Oh yeah? Vibes. Only smoke Vibes.
Like oh yeah?
About here. And only listen to the Hard Luck Show Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays. We're out of here.
Woo!
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.